You're listening to the Rubber Chickens Unleashed.
Two wide receivers right side and Wilds with his hands on his knees. They'll hand to Wilds inside the 20. Stiff arm to 15, 10, 5. Touchdown. Touchdown, Carolina. Touchdown, Brandon Wilds from 24 yards out. All the players crowded around that we can't see and the officials can't see.
It's that close.
First down, Carolina. Oh, my goodness. It's not supposed to be like this. Here's the call, I think.
After review, the ruling on the field stands.
And 85,000 confirm it. My goodness. What a series. What a ball game.
We are. Yeah, I said it. We are. This is Rock Nation. Pledge your allegiance. Get your fatigues on. All black everything. Black cars, all black everything. And our girls are blackbirds. Riding with their diligence. I can't more in depth if you boys really real enough. This is not familiar. I'll explain later. But for now, let me get back to this paper.
Hello, Gamecock Nation, and welcome to TRC Unleashed. This is episode number 70. TRC stands for the Rubber Chickens, and you can find our writings at therubberchickensblog.com. You can follow us on Twitter at RUBRChickens, and you can go like us on Facebook. I'm your host, Buck, coming to you from Atlanta, and I am joined, as always, by T-Bone from somewhere in the upstate, G-Man from the Midlands, and I can promise you one thing. Neither of those guys was involved in the throwing of debris on the field on Saturday because they wouldn't be caught dead in an end zone seat, okay? Let me just tell you that.
It's either that or our little girly arms would not actually be able to get something.
You wouldn't be able to throw something far enough down there.
Right.
I could see you throw a paper cup in Todd Gurley's face from like 5 feet away and then, and then run. So, wow, you know,
don't want to do that, though. He might headbutt you.
Right. So you get close enough for him to headbutt you, he will do it.
Exactly, yes.
Or shove you in the face.
Right.
Yeah, so this is our first real happy podcast of the year, I think.
Yeah, it feels good, doesn't it? It feels really good.
Awesome. Yeah, we had that first disaster and then, a mediocre win over East Carolina and – You know, I think we were kind of telling ourselves, I know I was telling people at work, I was like, hey, this East Carolina team, man, they're better than you think. This is a pretty good football team. They won 10 games, Spurrier said anything, and they're like, oh, yeah, man, East Carolina, whatever. And then East Carolina put me in the right frame of mind on Saturday before our game. Because watching them, they jumped out 21-0. They literally should have had a 35-0 lead at one point, if not more. And so I started thinking, maybe East Carolina really is that good. Maybe that was a really good win for us. And my confidence kind of grew, and then my confidence faded as the hours passed as we waited for the game to start. Both you guys were at the game. You were only together for a short period of time, it sounds like. You've got your separate lives, when you go to the game. But give me a little...
What we have is a virtual online friendship that is much healthier than our actual face-to-face physical relationship.
We've talked about that. There are a lot of people like on Twitter that are very entertaining that I don't think we would ever want to meet in person,
right.
Because it could completely ruin... your perception.
G-Man is one of those people.
Right. You do not want trust me, listening audience, you do not want to meet this dude.
He is hairy, and hard to get along with.
Thanks, guys. That's great. Back to the East Carolina thing for a second though.
Yeah.
Didn't Spurrier make a comment about East Carolina in the Big Ten at some point?
Oh, yeah. He said he would rather play East Carolina than one of those bottom Big Ten teams.
Speaking of that, I mean, I know this is way off subject, but how bad do they suck? I mean,
That was prophetic what he said.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I mean, and did y'all hear what Gary Patterson said?
No, huh?
They were talking to Gary Patterson because they evidently clobbered Minnesota.
Right.
TCU, and they asked him about how well his offense performed. He said, well, you know, how well is your offense performing, you know, above expectation for the year? He goes, well, you know, we've only played Sanford in a Big Ten school.
Oh, man.
So anyway, yeah, the East Carolina thing, I mean, I got really offended listening to, I think it was the Pac-Man, whatever his name is,
yeah,
the week before, and he was talking about how nobody in the SEC played anybody the week before. I mean, nobody played anybody. I'm like, well, you know, we kind of played somebody. I mean, right. Yeah, I mean, East Carolina, but they're better than these, I don't know, some of those pansies that the rest of the SEC played.
They're this year's Central Florida.
They are.
Just wait and see. Watch them. They're going to spank North Carolina this coming weekend.
Oh, I think they are too.
They get the Tar Heels at home.
Exactly.
And you know they're going to be going crazy.
Oh, man.
And they'll win out. They'll win out.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're gonna beat them. So anyway, sorry to go off on that.
No, give me a taste of what it was like being there, having to wait around for the start of the game, you know, the bad weather.
It was awesome. It was awesome. I mean, it was like a whole day of it. I mean, we got down there early and hung out and watched that. We watched that game you're talking about and had a couple beverages. T-Bone came over for a cameo, and then he headed back off to whatever he does. But it was a great atmosphere. And I was texting you, Buck. You're giving me weather updates, which was nice because I had no idea what was going on, and you really had no way of knowing, you know?
Right.
And so anyway, at one point you sent me one and said, get in there. So we get in there. We got in there just in time. I mean, I hear they did an abbreviated 2001, which I missed, but the place was packed.
I saw that. That was fascinating because they didn't bring the band out there. You know, they didn't really do any of the band pregame stuff, but they still did the whole cocky thing in the box.
Right.
They did that. There was no... It was interesting the choices they made, the things they didn't do. They did the cocky in a box.
I'm still having a hard time with that.
Didn't Justin Timberlake and the guy on Saturday Night Live do a skit about
cocky in a box?
Oh, man. Okay, move on. Yeah,
they still did that. They didn't. They played 2001, but our players just kind of jogged out after it was over. No smoke.
Yeah.
And then the fascinating thing was, and if you think about this, when do the players ever warm up in front of a full stadium?
Right.
I've never seen it happen until Saturday.
Yeah.
And it was fascinating to watch the Georgia players warming up right up beside our student section. And the students did not miss the opportunity to really raise some cane because a couple of the Georgia offensive linemen totally lost their composure and ran over to the bushes and were screaming at them.
Really?
And the students were, yeah, oh, yeah, it was hilarious. Except for one, Monsieur Todd Gurley, who just put his hands on his hip and cocked his head to the side and just watched it all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just drank it all in.
He's like, I'm a bad man.
Yeah, exactly.
You really don't want any of me.
It really felt that way. It really felt that way.
But the atmosphere at the game was just almost no other game I've ever been to because the crowd was really jacked up and you had the delay. So you had this sort of anticipation thing going on and then you had the weather and then it's halftime started raining. The rain didn't seem to bother anybody. Everybody stayed. I mean, it was sort of an experience.
It was a carnival atmosphere.
It was.
And then it was funny because they kept delaying and delaying and delaying and not to move ahead of where we are in the game. But end of the third quarter, beginning of the fourth quarter, there was a clap of thunder and a peal of lightning that had to have hit the Bojangles
right
outside the stadium. And it was funny because you saw the refs like kicking the dirt, acting like they didn't see anything. What's going on here, boys?
We're not going to stop the game now. We're too close to being finished. Yeah.
I think that would have been a real buzzkill for the Gamecocks, too.
Oh, yeah.
We were all worried about that happening and like, oh, we've got all this momentum because we started thinking about the game getting delayed there. Man, we must have just dodged that thing.
Yeah.
A lot of times sitting in the stadium and interacting with the opposite fan base, which was good and bad. I mean, it was kind of fun to be there and in a lack, you know, it was like, okay, we're going to be here for another hour. Let's all talk a little bit. I witnessed several bad fan interactions, several good fan interactions. Two bad ones that I thought were particularly good. To the guy that was walking in and yelling to everyone wearing a Gamecock jersey, Hey, number seven, Jadeveon Clowney's gone. Hey, number 21, there's no Marcus Lattimore to save you. Hey, number 14, Connor Shaw's about to get cut. To that guy, Aaron Murray's gone, buddy.
Right.
Hey, how about 4 out of 5? How about that?
Yeah, 4 out of 5.
Yeah.
But then on the other hand, I saw a nice looking, almost dweeby little cute man with his son who was about 10 or 11 standing in line for the restroom in his supper. And a Gamecock fan came up to these little Georgia guys and said, hey kid, ask your daddy what happened the last time you were here.
That's not right. That's not right. Yeah, I actually sat with a good friend of mine who is a Georgia fan, Georgia grad, and he's very reasonable. We had a nice, civilized observation of the game together, but it was interesting. A lot of, getting ahead of ourselves, but a lot of commentary about the Georgia coaching staff. But
Let's go through the game, because I think we're going to want to get to some of the Georgia reactions after the game was over. But we received the opening kick like we are wont to do, and move right down the field. And we're not going to sit here and tell you that we told you so. I've been the one kind of banging the drum as we march here. Dylan Thompson was on target on Saturday at least for the first half. You know, I don't know if you guys know, he only threw 4 passes in the second half.
One in the fourth quarter,
which
yeah,
was just,
we know, you know, yeah, we know what happened there.
Yeah, yep. Right, exactly.
That's all he needed to throw.
But, you know, Spurrier had a great game plan. He had obviously been watching some film, either from just the Clemson game or from Pruitt's defenses at Florida State. Saw the linebackers were playing up. They were playing two deep safeties, and there was just a pasture in between where we could get the ball to Roland and Jones and all those guys.
It was cover two, and they were sending a linebacker on every play.
Yeah,
and the middle of the field was just there all night long.
And I got to tell you, after that first drive, I was thinking, Shaq. You know, Shaq is going to have one of these 12 catches, 190-yard games, the way it looked like. It just looked like it was going to be his game. I think he caught 4 passes in the first quarter and didn't catch another one the rest of the game. But he was looking good. And our wide receiver core is as good and deep as I can remember, and I'm lumping the tight ends with that group too. You got, Cooper Jones, Roland, Busta, Bird,
Adams.
I mean, there's a lot of weapons, guys coming out of the backfield. So when our offense is, I mean, we're going to score some points this year.
Well, let's kind of take a step back too, and remember preseason. Isn't this really playing out kind of like we all said it would and probably needed to? I mean, the offense is going to be ahead of the defense. We all knew that, and we knew we were going to have to score some points to win. This game was really an example of exactly what I kind of expected to happen this season, where we give up some points, but we score enough points to win because we frankly have a balanced offense with really an abundance of weapons. As long as we give Dylan the time, then we're going to be able to move the football. I mean, and that's really what we saw on Saturday.
Right. So it was a great start to the game. Georgia gets the ball, and bang, bang, 2 plays. Mm. They're in the end zone. It looked like the first 2 or 3 series, and I know we held them to a field goal on the second series, it looked like we were playing with 7 guys on defense. I mean, it was just I was like, this is going to be a long day. So they scored quickly. Brandon Wildes fumbled the pitch. And I got to say, I thought I wasn't sure that Brandon Wiles was going to come off the bench after that, after that play. I thought
I was not calling for him.
I thought he might be done for the day, but we held him to a field goal there. Traded some scores. One Marshall Morgan for Georgia set the SEC record for consecutive field goals, and I think it was 20.
That's right.
It was 20, and he will never forget that 20th.
Right. Right.
Or his next
21st or 22nd.
Next attempt.
So, yeah, you know, the first half, I don't think we could have played any better than we did. Go in at halftime up 24 to 13.
Right.
The defense played the way that it's going to have to play, which is just good enough. And I'll tell you what I saw or what I'm seeing from week one to week two to week three. Week one, we looked lost. We looked frightened. We looked confused. You know, week two, we looked a little bit better. Against Georgia the other day, even though we gave up 408 yards, which is, you know, not terrible in an SEC game against a powerful offense, a lot of attitude, man. Our guys would make the tackle, and they would be in the face of Gurley or whoever. And you'd see their head bobbing, and you just knew they were talking to those Georgia players getting in their head.
Well, JT Surratt,
you're starting to see some players really growing up. I mean, Rico McWilliams now, I watch him playing man on somebody, and you're like, you know, he can do that. He's going to get beat out now. Yeah. He can do it.
Right.
Al Harris Jr. made some plays in this game.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you start seeing those guys. Sky Moore had a terrible first half of a first quarter. And then the rest of the game, he was on a mission.
Right.
Well, he looks like an SEC linebacker, you know, the kind that you know, if he gets a couple more pounds on him, and that guy is just scary good. He is. I mean, he's by far our most talented guy on defense if you just watch him from play to play. But you're right. The attitude was much improved. But I'll tell you what, the one thing that was very clear to me watching that game was the talent at receiver on the Georgia football team as compared to the Texas A&M football team.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
Not even close.
I'll go so far as to say that they're about as close to a one-man team that I've seen in Georgia ever, you know, because there's Gurley. You know, Chubb didn't get enough touches.
Michelle either.
Michelle didn't get enough touches. Hudson Mason's not going to win ball games for those guys. Nobody on defense, well, I shouldn't say nobody stood out. Herrera.
Was he 52 or 62?
52 and Ramique Wilson, 51. Those guys stood out. But it was as bland a Georgia team. I mean, as much talent as they supposedly have, you know, I walked away from that game. You feel great about the win. Anytime you beat Georgia, you beat a sixth-ranked Georgia team. And I go all the way back to New Year's Day or whatever day that Georgia played Nebraska in the Outback Bowl.
Right.
And they lost. And T-Bone tweeted something to the effect that, well, this should, you know, this should cement Georgia's top 10 ranking going into next year, you know, kind of as a joke. And sure enough, here they were ranked in the top 10.
It's an amazing thing, and it's got to be frustrating for that fan base. I mean, I hate to feel sorry for a fan base that has way more of a winning tradition than we do. But every year, they're like, number five recruiting class, number four recruiting class, number three recruiting class, every year.
Yeah.
And then you watch Rick and Bobo and those guys coach them, like I put on the blog this week, to almost 78% of their full potential.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, right.
I was just shocked at the lack of playmakers on the outside. I mean, I know a couple of guys are hurt, you know.
Yeah.
But, I mean, really, I mean, Shaq Rowland was the best receiver on the field. By far, and I mean, well, I mean, as far as talent, you know,
was number two.
Yeah, Nick. I mean, as far as specimens go, Shaq is, you know, a specimen. You know,
right?
It was just, I was really surprised. But A&M, you know, many, many more talented guys on the outside. But anyway, I went off subject, but I just wanted to bring that up.
Yeah, an Alabama guy that I work with after that first week came in, and he said, man, he said Georgia's good. He said they looked really good, and I said, I don't know. You know, that game was 24 to 21. They were leading Clemson, you know, early in the fourth quarter. And they broke it open with a couple of, you know, I don't know if Clemson was tired or what, or if it was just, you know, Todd Gurley, All-American. I just wasn't sold on Georgia. And I'm still
But those backs are really good. I mean, loaded at running back. I mean, I think Keith Marshall is really a bust. Yeah. But the other three guys, super, super talented. And I don't think they utilized them like they needed to in that game. I mean, after Michelle had that touchdown, I don't think he carried the ball again, maybe once.
Yeah.
You know? So I don't think they
– He returned one kick, I think.
They put him back there deep one time. But I think they're super talented at running back. I just – anyway, we're getting off subject, but I kind of agree with you.
Yeah. So, well, I'm hoping they are pretty darn good. Because that would bode well for us. But I'm just, again, we're only 3 weeks into the season, so a lot of football to be played. So come out at after half, and again, we've already mentioned only threw four passes in the second half, and the fact that I didn't even notice that until well after the game was over is awesome. Because you know what that means? That means we were running the ball, and we were running it well. I wasn't screaming at the TV, why don't we throw the ball? Because we were getting, you know, chunks of yardage on first and second down. And Mike Davis had a little sprained ankle there, and Brandon Wilds, who I said was an average, good, you know, solid backup SEC running back, comes out and rushes for, I think, 91 yards in the second half and looked just fantastic.
He was a full-grown man in that second half. Yeah. I mean, it's like, okay, we need 9 yards for the first down. It's third and nine.
Yeah.
You give him the ball, he gets 9 yards and an inch on his own.
Yeah. Yeah, so we go up 31-28, I believe it was.
Well, Georgia scored to make it 31-28.
Georgia scored to make it 31-28.
Went for two, and they got 28 after they went for two.
Right. And then is that when we came back? Is that the Wilds?
That was four plays, 52 yards. That was after Sean Carson, let's give the man some credit,
had
a nice kickoff return, took us out to the 42 or something like that. And then we went 58 yards on four plays for a touchdown to make it 38-28.
Yep. And
you can do that in the first quarter, and it's impressive when you do that in the first quarter, you know. But when you do that in the fourth quarter with a game on the line, that's when it matters.
Yeah, yeah. There was a point, I believe it was late in the third quarter, when we were up 31-20, and we held Georgia, and they punted to us. And I was thinking, drive the nail in here. I mean, we score a touchdown here, it's ball game, it's over. And we had a horrible series. I think it was Dylan got sacked. So anyway, let's jump ahead to 38-35. We're up 38-35 after Georgia had cut into the lead. And just an incredible sequence of events from that point on. I mean, we've got the ball. I think we had, and I don't have the play sequence in front of me, but we had a running play, I think, for a couple of yards, and we had a penalty in there. And I told my wife, because I could just see us punting the ball back to them with about 4 minutes left and them driving down and scoring with, you know, basically no time on the clock. So here it is, Mike Davis for four, Mike Davis for one. We had a false start penalty, and I was – just hoping to get a good punt out of Tyler Hull, and Dylan throws that interception. So he throws the interception. We get this bizarre illegal block call on Shaq Roland.
Shot block on Shaq.
Yeah,
which honestly, in a play which he appears to, upon review, have fallen down on purpose.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, the play everybody's talking about from their first down and goal from the four. There's a lot of debate among the Georgia folks here about this. They decide instead of giving the ball to Gurley, they go play action. Gerald Dixon stays home, and that's Gerald Dixon, not Gerald Dixon Jr.
Little G
gets pressure. The fullback is in the flat, but he's covered from what I could tell. I don't know if that play works out. I still don't even know if they score. But instead of just hurling the ball out of the back of the end zone, Mason just slings it into Dixon's knee, basically. and gets called for intentional grounding. I believe that put him back at about the 14. They ran one running play with Gurley, and then had a pass play that was knocked down. And then Marshall Morgan came on and just blew it. I mean, just missed a chip shot 28-yarder. What were your thoughts as that sequence was happening?
There were a lot of people in the stands that were not watching a football game at that point. Around me, there were a lot of people that were looking down, looking back, had their hands in their hand, their head in their hands.
Yeah.
And then there were just a few faithful souls that were actually watching, and they provided a play-by-play.
Right.
There for a few seconds. And when we started screaming, he missed it, he missed it, he missed it. You saw all these people looking up, and you saw the electricity spreading. Oh, my God, he missed it.
Well, right. The roar on the miss from the student section, because he kicked it right at the student section, and they were still here in force. They had not left. That was one of the loudest roars I think I've ever heard coming out of that stadium when he missed that field goal. I mean, it was just incredible.
Right.
I was watching, and you know, a lot of us thought, you know, it kind of took us back to days past when, you know, we would be in games forever and lose them late in the fourth quarter. I mean, that was sort of our history for many years, and so right. That was the feeling that I kind of had was, you know, crap, we played this great game, Dylan throws this unfortunate pick, and that's going to be it.
Right.
You know, we're going to lose, but you know, thank goodness for Mike Bobo and Mark Richt and Little G. And I tell you what's lost in the equation there is we made a great play on Gurley to stop him for any gain, and then JT Surratt blocked that pass, which might have been completed. You never know.
Right.
Yep. And that was a very big play in the game, and of course the missed field goal. But it was not just the first down play that made that happen.
Right.
It felt like that year against Clemson. I guess it was Spurrier's first year, maybe his second year. When Clemson was driving late, and then we blitzed a Brinkley and Savelle Newton and sacked the quarterback back there, knocked him back a few feet, and then he missed the field goal.
Right.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'll tell you what, back to the pick for a second. I don't know if y'all watched the replay, but I watched the replay, and I didn't really know what was going on in the game. I just didn't really pay attention to live. But in the replay, the Georgia coaches, you got to give them a little credit there. They knew we were going to run that deep square in on 3rd and 12.
Yeah, right. Blitz. Yeah.
Well, they put an extra – they instead of playing two deep, they had two deep. Then they had a robber guy back behind them, and that was a Swan. And he just automatically ran to the spot of where that square end was being thrown all night long. And Dylan didn't see him. I mean, clearly just threw to the spot, and there he was. I mean, it was a great, great defensive call.
And I'll make a quick comment. A lot of people complain about Vern and Gary on the CBS broadcast. Aside from butchering about a half dozen names, you know, Sonny Mitchell, the running back for Georgia.
Right, right.
I thought they did a great job. Danielson pointed that out immediately.
He did.
He said Thompson didn't see it. They were playing a robber. Said, you know, there's that split second where you look down to catch the football, and that's when Swan moved up. And
You're right. You're right. They did butcher some stuff, but I thought they did a good job. Vern was not his usual annoying self to me during when I watched the replay.
Yeah. So.
I haven't watched it yet. I'm still savoring that moment. I don't know. Yeah. I still got to watch it.
Right. So we get the ball back, and it was just it was big boy football, as they like to say at that point. I mean, we ran the ball. And I'll tell you this, on 3rd and 7, Wilds gets the ball.
Ran for the first down.
There's no question in my mind that he got over the 50-yard line. If you say the first down mark was at the 50, and they put it short of the 50, you know, just shy. And then I don't know how this was at the stadium, but, you know, we ran that play. There was a timeout. I can't remember if Georgia called it or we called it. We decide we're going to go for it on 4th down, and we called timeout. So we come out, and we try to get them to jump off sides. We call another timeout. Oh, there was, of course, a measurement in between, too.
Right.
So we call timeout again, and then we come out and actually run the play, and then there's another measurement, and that two plays, two measurements, two timeouts, and it felt like it took 4 hours to complete. Yes. I mean, it felt like forever. And even on Dylan's, you know, sneak, it looked like he got well over the 50-yard line.
Right.
And the line judge from the opposite side of the pile somehow spotted the ball. And there's a lot of Georgia fans that are using this screen capture that shows the football like millimeters short of the post, you know, saying it shouldn't have been a first down. And I'm like, yeah, but what if the camera angle is just, you know, a couple of degrees off?
Wouldn't
you see a gap
completely perpendicular to the ground?
Right, right.
Well, I mean, you know, under that theory, you would just have to think, well, the referee was just blatantly cheating. I mean, he's looking right at the football.
Yeah, they're looking at it, and they all got in there. Yeah, they all got in there. And Todd gave a great Todd call. He said we got a first down by the laces of the football.
when the laces are on top of the football.
No, we didn't.
Yeah.
but that's such a Todd call.
I'll tell you what was, you know, that moment though when he looked down and there's like, you know, 6 or 7 or 8 players that all looked down too. It was just sort of a surreal moment, you know. Yep. He's looking down, and everybody's looking down, and everybody knows that this is the call because Georgia's going to have the ball back with 1:25 and 2 timeouts at the 50.
Yeah.
You know, you're thinking, you know, if he's short, that's probably the ball game. It was just a crazy moment.
And both sets of players are motioning in the opposite direction, convinced, you know.
It was a circus. Yeah.
The TV moment that I really wanted was this referee in the white hat to stand up and throw his arm forward. Which in the stadium, I'm sure you saw that, but they still had the camera like on the ball and you heard the roar, and all of a sudden you started seeing players jumping up and down for South Carolina. But it was just completely nerve wracking. And I will comment. There's been a lot of talk of the officiating. You know, a couple of plays. The holding call on the 54-yard Gurley touchdown run, you know, if you want to say, if you're a Georgia fan, because I don't think South Carolina fans would say this, that was ill-timed for them to throw a flag, that's fine. If you say it's not holding, you're kidding yourself.
I was screaming holding from East Upper.
Yeah. I mean, it was – there's no question it was a hold, and it happened to be a hold on – the guy who was going to plug the hole where Gurley was running.
It was a point of attack. Yeah.
You know, so sure. Could you call holding on practically every play in a football game? You probably could.
But you're going to call holding every time they turn a player, you know, 80 degrees to the left at the point of attack.
Well, I've heard people explain this before. Is they're not supposed to call – they could call holding on every play, but they're supposed to call it when it has a result – on the play that changes the outcome, you know, of that play.
Right.
And clearly, I mean, that was right at the point. They dropped the flag long before you knew Gurley was going to score the touchdown. So it's not like he's on the 10 and they're, there was a hole back there. Let's stop the play. I mean, they dropped the flag immediately.
Yeah, that's a non-issue. Right. Anybody that brings that up is just whining.
Yeah. You know, there were some folks that didn't like the intentional grounding call on Mason. You know, there was a receiver in the area. It was one that Rick is sending to the SEC office because he thought because the ball hit the defender that it might, you know, might have changed the call but you know, I actually talked to a friend of mine who's a high school referee who said, you know, intentional grounding is intent. Yeah, right. Still
it's in the name. It's in the name. Yeah. Intent. You could see his intent.
You could see his eyes look down at the ground and throw it at the kneecaps of Gerald Dixon. So there was never any intent for him to try to complete that pass, whether somebody was in the area or not.
Right. And think back to, I mean, obviously, all of us watch a lot of football. We've seen a lot of Georgia football too. That is what Georgia does on that. Aaron Murray, I can't tell you how many times he would throw that ball on the ground when they had that busted play. That's sort of something that the Georgia guys do. I think that's part of they're taught that, you know?
Right.
And so, I mean, he's just throwing the ball away. He just happened to not do it very well. He should have thrown it closer to the receiver. He probably would have gotten it, but he threw it.
Or thrown it out of the back of the end zone.
Right. That's what you do. I mean, and things like that happen. That's part of the game. You know, we watched Steven Garcia kick the freaking ball through his own upright one time. You know, quarterbacks under duress do crazy things. Yeah, that's the way it works.
But they were bad calls on both sides. I mean, you know, that we've talked about the fact that Gurley headbutted our guy. Well, that resulted in 3 points because we had stopped them on that drive.
Yep.
He should have been flagged. And then the play where they call the phantom chop block on Roland.
Number four.
That resulted in about, I don't know, maybe 5 yard advancement on that, on the, putting the ball on the four. That shouldn't have been called. So, I mean, there's certainly calls on both sides that could have been deemed questionable. So, hey, you know, that's just a football game. Get over it, people. We outgained them. We had more time of possession.
Never trailed.
Yeah, we trailed 10-7.
We were down 10-7?
Yes, we were.
Only trailed once.
It was still once. It was still early. Probably the bourbon was probably still wearing off at that point for you. So
we only trailed once in that football game. That's so that proves my point, whatever it was.
So G-Man already alluded to it. Got to say that Sean Carson did not play a terrible game. Had a significant return, 42-yard return, and had a couple of other pretty good returns as well. I don't think he's the guy who's going to break our no kickoff return for touchdown streak, but he certainly proved to be competent against Georgia on Saturday night. So we'll tip our caps to competency.
Yes,
that was a big that kickoff return was a big play in the game.
Huge play.
It was, and
huge
the other play. Thing he is now leading the conference in kickoff return yardage.
Yeah, yeah. He's also leading the conference in number of kickoff returns. So.
That used to be the Chris Culver plan. I'm going to be the kickoff returner for the team with the worst defense in the conference.
He's the all-time. Isn't Culver still like the all-time leading? Real quick, Culver was on TV last night, and, man, they were talking him up. He was guarding Jeffrey, and they're like, "Oh, you got to watch out for this Culver. He's going to jump one of these routes in a minute. They got to be careful with that guy."
Well, I saw they completed a long ball down the sideline to Jeffrey when he was covering him. I saw that late in the game.
Yeah. All right. How about let's T-Bone? You want to take us into some Rubber Chicken Awards?
You know, our let's talk about the Rubber Chicken Awards, and I want all of you to listen very closely to what I have to say about this, because I want to talk about our good friends at Blitz Jewelry. The folks at Blitz Jewelry can do all sorts of things for you. Let's say that perhaps you've got a wife or a significant other who's not into sport at all. Maybe your entree into getting her to share the fun of college football with you is through some custom-made, team-specific jewelry.
Right.
Or perhaps you've made your significant other mad because you've missed a wedding or two because they conflicted with a football schedule. Nothing says I'm sorry quite like some custom-made, logo-carrying Blitz jewelry. So check out our friends at Blitz Jewelry. That would be blitzjewelry.etsy.com, I believe.
Yes. All right. I'm writing that down now. I'm going to go there and bookmark it.
Hey, thanks, Mickey.
Yeah, exactly. The preceding commercial announcement was brought to you in the spirit of Mickey Plyler on WCCP.org.
All right, G-Man, why don't you go first? Who gets your Rubber Chicken Award?
Well, we've already alluded to this guy, but I'm going to give Brandon Wiles a little love here because the guy – did I steal your chicken? Sorry.
No.
But anyway, he not only did he not catch the pitch, but then he botched the recovery on that play in the first quarter. We're all thinking, you know, this spells doom for the football game. But and we know he's dropped the ball a couple other times in his career. But I got to tell you, he obviously got determined after that and came out and just played a whale of a football game. I mean, Mike got dinged a little bit. We needed Wilds, and Spurrier said on the post game how he is a tough inside runner. And man, did he show it. I'll tell you, that touchdown run that he broke, 24-yarder. Well, he almost broke the play before that, you know? I mean, two outstanding runs, and then the run to pick up within an inch of the first down, you know, right there at the end of the game was also a great run. I mean, the guy just played tough when we needed him, and I'll tell you what, he gets my chicken award for just his overall great play. We could not have done it without him. Brandon Wallace.
Good call.
T-Bone.
You got to pay attention to initials when I'm making this call. somebody we desperately needed to become emotional, to step up, to put some fire in the defense. Jebediah Tecumseh, Philippe Melchizedek, Cornelius Surratt.
Did you write that down, or did you do that off the top of your head?
I did that off the top of my head, man.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. You're still sharp after all these years.
Tecumseh. I like Tecumseh. That's good. Yeah.
All right. Good call.
I love that guy. Love the way he played with emotion. It's kind of, you know, we're all dying against Tamu, watching our defense just run around listlessly. To see them regaining this confidence and to see guys feeling confidence in themselves enough to say, I'm going to start screaming at everybody else.
Yeah.
It was a good development. So
well, he is basically taking over the leadership role for the defense. Yep. And good to see it.
Yep.
You know, he's got that fire about him. You can see it. You can tell.
Yeah. Well, you know, since you guys have been making up rules for the Rubber Chicken Awards, as you know, giving the awards to people from other teams or to politicians,
your man give it to Venus Williams one time?
Yeah, it's like people not even associated with football, much less Gamecock football. I'm gonna give out two. I'm gonna take my rubber chicken and I'm gonna split him right down the middle. The first one is Sky Moore for kind of living up to some of his preseason billing. He was one of the guys who really played with a lot of attitude, was all over the field. I think he led the team in tackles Saturday night, if I'm not mistaken.
Think so.
Had just a fantastic game on the defensive side. On the offensive side, little Nicky Jones, man. This is kind of a lifetime achievement award for Nick Jones, because he just does not get appreciated. He's a guy who came in with Lattimore,
afterthought,
not highly recruited, and he has just worked and worked and worked, and he, you know, caught a couple of passes as a freshman, a few as a sophomore, and then, last year really burst onto the scene against Georgia and has just been a solid, solid contributor. And the ball that he caught down the sideline from Thompson, when Thompson made a beautiful throw, and Quincy Mauger, free safety for Georgia, just blew him up. I mean, just completely knocked him off his feet. He jumped up like he just ran out of bounds on his own, like he wasn't even hit. And he even looked, one of our Twitter followers pointed out, he looked like he even wanted to toss the ball to Mauger, you know, as he walked by him. It was just
You know what that was right there. That's an answer for him getting blown up in the Texas A&M game. He basically is like, okay, not again.
Right.
Not again.
Yep. All right. So a great win over Georgia. The only thing better than a win over Georgia is a win over Clemson. And so it's always nice to get a little cherry on top of the season this early.
Hey, how about this? How about this? Who would have ever thought this was possible in our lifetimes? 9 out of the last 10 games against Clemson and Georgia.
Yeah.
It's 9 of 10. It's unbelievable. And we need to sit down and just kind of reflect on that. You younger fans that don't know any better, those guys used to pound our heads in every year.
Every year.
Every year. Yeah. 1 out of every 4 years, we might beat one of them.
Right.
Yeah. You beat one of them and you feel really good about yourself. Never beat both.
I mean, never.
Yeah. 9 out of 10. I mean, just savor that. Let that sink in. I mean, that is amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. Good stuff. All right. Good. Rubber Chicken Awards. Great win. I paid attention to East Carolina and Virginia Tech on Saturday. I didn't really see much else. I did pay a little bit of attention to what's going on in the SEC. And as we're wrapping up the win over Georgia, I'm thinking, man, we might really have a shot at getting back to Atlanta. But I tell you what, you look at Missouri.
Yeah.
Appears to be just as good as they were last year or close to it. Kentucky is much better. Tennessee is much better. We still got to go to Auburn. it's still a tough road, even after the win.
I'll say this: no team from the SEC East is going to the college football playoff this year. No team. It is going to be a dogfight. It's going to be a 5-3 team that wins the East.
And you have to worry about the West, worry is probably not the right word. Wonder. You have to wonder about the West. They've got five teams in the top 10. The one team that's not ranked is Arkansas, and they've been mashing people the last couple of weeks. I could see a team come out of the West with two losses.
Hey, did anybody see the end of the Kentucky-Florida game when Kentucky got screwed?
Yeah, they did.
Oh, man.
They got Florida.
Yeah, they did.
Yep.
Totally screwed. But I guess when you're Kentucky, you know.
So, the last two weekends have not been great for football watching, except for our game. Got Vandy coming up this week. Should be a breather, but again, you just never know.
First road game.
Come to play.
A lot of new guys, fresh faces will be seeing their first road action. So, look forward to that. T-Bone, how about bring us some Twitter questions? I think we had quite a few today.
Yeah, let's look here at the old Twitter feed. We got a few Twitter questions varying from the mundane to the serious to the completely ridiculous. We'll start with Ben Black at Wando Cock, who asked us to explain the blocking below the knee penalty on our offensive lineman. I forget who it was.
It was Busta Anderson. And it was a simple cut block on, I believe it was either a defensive end or a linebacker who was not engaged with anybody else. And I think it was a bad call.
Yeah.
If somebody else can maybe tweet back at us and let us know why that was called, but I think it was completely legal.
Well, Gary Danielson said, "I thought you could do that."
Right. Yeah. I think we all thought that as long as that player is not engaged up high with anybody else, I don't know why. Because these option teams, the Citadel and Georgia Southern and Wofford and all that,
I think the chop block is a point of emphasis, obviously, because they caught it on Roland when he's trying to tackle somebody.
Right.
But I think that's a point of emphasis this year.
Yeah.
So I think you just got guys looking for it. And I really think that's just one of those calls that you're going to see. And they're a little trigger happy, kind of like the – targeting last year, you know, where they were calling it all the time.
Yeah.
I think you'll see that wane. That's just one of those things you got to put up with for a while.
Right. Yeah.
We've got another question from Block C Blog, which you can find at Block C Blog. What does Alan Knott eat for breakfast?
What does he eat for breakfast?
Whatever it is, I like it because he played a heck of a game.
And, I was trying to think of
keep eating it.
Knott's berries. I don't know.
I think he drinks three Schlitz malt liquors and chases it with a tire iron.
All right.
We've got Jeff Cars gives us a hashtag dare ya at anti twat waffle or at b click clack.
I think they're the same person.
Yeah, they are. It was a trick question.
Right.
And given that, along the same lines, Layla, who is anti-twat waffle, says, at Rubber Chickens, given the option, would you rather have an oatmeal chocolate chip cookie with no raisins or a tiramisu donut?
Well, see, her initial question was cookies or donuts. And I think that's way too broad. Because there are some cookies I would choose over some donuts, and there are some donuts I would choose over some cookies. So I think that's why she went more specific. But back to the first question, if I only had one choice between a cookie or a donut, I'm probably choosing a donut, and I'm just gonna cross my fingers that it's a Krispy Kreme or, Dunkin' Donuts suck. They're not good. Their coffee is fantastic. Donuts not so good. There's some great specialty donut shops around here in Atlanta, so I'd have to go donut. So what was the choice? What was the cookie or donut choice?
Chocolate chip cookie oatmeal, but no raisins.
Well, personally, I hate oatmeal, so I would go with the tiramisu donut.
That sounds nasty.
Do you think so?
Yeah, it does. Johnny Harper, he can be found at Johnny Harpster. Aside from Spurrier's post-game reactions, which were priceless, by the way, what is your favorite media response to this game?
Well, I live in Atlanta, so I'd have to say everything. Everything. It's been fun to listen to the you know, the radio hosts here are all from north of the Mason-Dixon line, so they for their ratings, they really want Georgia to do well, but they don't. You can tell that they really don't have rooting interest outside of that. So it's fun to listen to them kind of needle the Georgia fan base, and then of course the AJC has columnists just kind of blow up, you know, and talk about how incredibly disappointing Georgia is year in and year out, and how you can count on them to lose one game, one close game, and, you know, basically calling them chokers. So it's kind of fun. So everything.
Couple interesting questions from someone who seems to get the spirit of the podcast.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that. That's Rickson Lane.
Yeah.
At Fast Lane Sports. Question number one, who is that elusive young buck returning kickoffs, and what did he do with Sean Carson?
I think it was Jadeveon Clowney. He was wearing number seven, right? Came back in.
Another one from Rickson Lane. How nice was it of Derek Mason to take the Vanderbilt players and organize them into a Woody Weidenhofer tribute band?
Which is an excellent reference from Rickson. Rickson's a younger guy. So,
he nailed that one.
Woody Weidenhofer was go ahead, G.
I was going to say, easy on the Vandy cutdowns. We got to play them this week.
Okay, well, we'll move quickly on.
I doubt they're listening. So
I know, but I don't like to do the cutdowns on the team. I don't. This is one of those trap games.
Yeah.
The way I see it, you got to go. You got to get ready.
So Weidenhofer was at Vandy from 97 to 2001. Overall record was 15-40. And,
defensive genius.
SEC record was 4-36.
Wow.
Yeah, those are some good years for them.
But you know what? In 98 and 99, they came in fifth place in the East. You know who came in sixth?
Yeah, we know.
We did.
I remember the 11-10 game. Was he coaching them?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's Weidenhofer.
That was when he played like six quarterbacks in the same game.
Here's a good question from Ian. Ian asked the question. Ian is at Boxian0. What is the podcast link and or name, and is it on iTunes?
I'm sorry. We're not on iTunes.
We're not on iTunes.
I wish I had the time and the resources to make that happen. But
a couple more quick ones. Mark Woodleaf, who is M.H. Woodleaf. That's L-I-E-F.
Yeah.
What kind of pants does Shaq Rowland wear on a Thursday?
I think, you know, during the warm weather, he probably wears Under Armour shorts. And when it gets a little cooler, he wears Under Armour long pants, because I think they get all their clothes for free. But you know what? If he's wearing his own clothes, have you guys ever seen those, like, those men's capri, you know, that come just below the knee?
Yeah, man, I got like those in every color.
Yeah, so Shaq's a pretty hip dude. I think maybe he would wear those.
Okay, and I guess finally, from Twan, who is at Anthony Goodrow, that's G-O-O-D-R-O-E, if you could be on Dancing with the Stars and could be partnered with a current USC football player, who would you pick and why?
I think Mike Davis would be fun to dance with. Because he's a little shorter than me, and maybe would let me lead. I don't think I could pick him up for any, you know, any fancy moves, but I'd go with Mike Davis.
Mike Davis, okay. What about you, G-Man?
I'd probably find a cheerleader, female variety.
G-Man, football player.
there's segments of the podcast that G-Man just thinks are total nonsense and would rather not participate.
The correct answer, G-Man. The correct answer to this question is you would dance with Patrick Fish because he's beautiful and his hair is radiant, and we could all kick his rear end if he tried to get fresh with us.
Okay.
Oh, good. All right.
Moving on.
What,
there,
no good?
There was one more. Oh, what did Ben Black, Wando Cock, you missed his, he had another question.
Missed his other question.
He said, what did Spurrier say to Zandy after the personal foul? He was pissed.
Yep.
I think it probably went something like, well, first of all, the last name Zandy kind of sounds like a Spurrier nickname already.
Right.
So it was like if his last name was Zandemir or Zandenhofer, he'd be like, hey, Zandy. I mean, you know, like Batesy, James Bates. Batesy! Oh, Batesy played for me. So, I don't know. I think he probably came over and said, Zandy, get over here. What you doing? What are you costing me 15 yards over here, son? I can't afford to give up 15 yards. Where's Donnell Stanley? Donnell, come here. Donnie. Come here. I want you to hold Zandy's hand. He's got anger issues. I want you to hold his hand until he calms down. So
that was like a Spurrier impression for the first half.
Right.
And a bad one. It was a bad Spurrier.
They're always
impression.
Bad. They're always right. bad.
But there at the end, it became like a, I don't know, Tom Brokaw or something.
The best Spurrier impressions are when they're just one word. Zandy!
Zandy!
So that's dead on. That's dead on. You make me do it for more than like three words, and I just completely lose it.
Yep. I hear you.
All right, good times. Man, we filled up an hour pretty quick. I think we just babbled for the most part. I mean, I had like no notes for this whole podcast, so that's...
We're supposed to take notes?
You did babble a lot, by the way. Good job.
Yeah. All right, good podcast. Folks, thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week. We hope to have a special guest sometime in the next couple of weeks, and we hope to have that special guest maybe even reciprocate. You may be able to hear somewhere else at some point.
This is starting to sound titillating.
Yes, I think that's the right word. Cocky in a box.
Oh man, it's getting punchy in here.
So it has now been 2,117 days since South Carolina lost to Clemson in football.
That's horrible.
I am Buck for the RubberChickensBlog.com, and we'll talk to you next week.
Turn up the God, peace God. Ain't nobody fresher. I'm in Mason, Martin, Martella on the table screaming. Fuck the other side, they jealous. We got a banquet full of bras. They